Coming up on Golf Today, world number two Colin Morikawa says he's all about the PGA Tour pushing back against rumors and a lack of concrete evidence when it comes to potential rival golf leagues. And for the world number three, Patrick Cantlay, you can keep your pit points. He is hunting for wins and wins alone. Top tens don't float his boat either. The UCLA Bruin unplugged. You will hear his voice. And another Pac-12 alum, Tiger Woods, the host with the most, takes to the microphone at 3 p.m. Eastern time. We'll carry it live from the Genesis Invitational Big Cat Big Wednesday. It's Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Now, this was the scene at Riviera Country Club on Tuesday. Hail in Pacific Palisades in the late afternoon. Temperatures fell to the 50s. Beaches were temporarily closed. Some snow fell along the Grapevine and Antelope Valley. There's Cooch trying to go for a run, get away from those stinging pellets. But today, a live look, L.A., that we have come to expect. Sunny skies, temperatures in the mid to upper 60s. Ideal, perfect golf weather for the Genesis Invitational. Welcome to our studio. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week magazine. You're a dedicated golfer. Have you played in hail? How would you hold up?
My only experience with ice on a golf course, Damon, has been served up by the bartender back in the clubhouse. I'm not going out in weather like that.
There are even some lines that even the most dedicated golfer should not cross. I'm with you. If you drop below, say, 50 degrees, I'll be at the 19th hole and not the 18th hole.
Yeah, I'll start in bad weather, or I'll start in good weather, but I won't start in bad weather. I might finish in bad weather, but I'm not going out in it.
No, I'm right with you. Well, a torrent of news, rumor, and innuendo on Tuesday, all related to this potential rival golf league and PGA Tour pros considering perhaps jumping to a rival league. This was from Kramer Hickok, a PGA Tour player on a podcast. On tour, we've got the players bumping up to $20 million, and the issue we're having on tour is getting the majors to bump up their purses because technically we're getting a small piece of the pie. So for more, we head out to Los Angeles. Welcome in Rex Hoggard from Riviera. Rex, how are the majors a part of this story?
I think they're going to be a huge part of this story. And actually, what Kramer mentioned in that podcast is something that's been talked about on the PGA Tour for a long time, a decade. Actually, Brant Snedeker brought this up back in 2014 after Fox had signed a TV rights deal with the USGA to televise the US Open and the other championships that the USGA handles. And part of that conversation was it was reported for $100 million a year, the TV rights deal. And at the time, the purse for the US Open was only $9 million. And so it led to a broader conversation about exactly how much of the revenue from the major championships that these players play in is being poured back into purses and back to the players. Now, I had a chance to talk to Brant about this yesterday, and he's looked at this really for about a decade and had an idea, and he said his estimate is between 10 to 15% of the revenue goes back into purses. Now, that's for the U.S. Open, PGA Championship, and Open Championship, the Masters, and Augusta National as a private club, and that's a little bit different conversation. But Brant pointed out this isn't necessarily about larger purses. It's about transparency, and the conversation all along is the players just want to have a say in exactly the product that they're involved in. He pointed out that in other sports, the NBA, for example, they have a much, much different scenario. The NBA collective bargaining agreement calls for roughly a 50-50 split between players and teams for all basketball-related income. And all he was looking for was transparency. And he pointed out, he agreed with Kramer, that the majors are going to have to be part of this larger narrative when we talk about the Super Golf League and the PGA Tour, which is essentially becoming a bidding war. And Brant also said that he has no interest whatsoever in playing the Super League. And he actually went so far as saying he would warn other players to consider what they're thinking about doing before they jump ship and leave the PGA Tour. And it's something that a lot of players are doing right now, including Colin Morikawa, who on Tuesday here at Riviera was asked his thoughts on the Super Golf League.
As it goes to the Saudi stuff, like I'm all for the PGA Tour. You know, I've done this. I've been a pro for 2.5 years. My entire life, I've thought about the PGA Tour. I've thought about playing against Tiger, beating his records, whatever, you know, some that might not even be breakable. But I've never had another thought of what's out there, right? I've never thought about anything else. Like, it's always been the PGA Tour. And has it opened up things for us as professional golfers to open up, you know, things for the PGA Tour to look at what to do better? Absolutely. I mean, we've seen a lot of changes, some good, some bad, some that are still going to be amended, I'm sure, as time goes on. But right now, I mean, you look at the best players, you know, that I see, and they're all sticking with the PGA Tour, and that's where I kind of stay, and that's where I belong, and I'm very happy to be here. The only way, you know, I can start thinking about other tours, other leagues, whatever you call it, I need concrete evidence. I need to be able to see a sheet in front of me and know what's out there, right? And as of now, for what I know, I don't know what's out there. All I've heard are rumors. All I heard is talk, and that's hard to do, right? I mean, it's like asking everyone here to go join another media company, and I'm just going to tell you, oh, I promise you there's going to be this, or there's going to be this. But you only heard it from me, not from who's starting it, but just from other people. It's kind of hard to know what exactly is there until I see it concrete. And that's just not how I live my life. Like, I need details. I'm really specific about things. And from my end, I couldn't get what I needed, and here we are.
Just to clarify, going back to the Saudi thing, are you saying you were all in on the PGA Tour? Or if they'd come to you back in November, December, and said, here's our schedule, here's the payment clarity, mm-hmm. It was something you would have considered?
You have to consider things. I think, you know, it's someone who's 25, who has played on tour for three years. I couldn't close off my doors because I don't know where golf is going to go. I mean, what if it did? What if we all went to go play whatever, you know, X tour? You would have to go over there. Or you'd want to go over there because that's where the best people are. But so, you know, my doors, I was still open to learning because I want to learn what's out there. I want to know the details, too. I don't want to keep hearing it from other people say, you need to go talk to this person. You need to do this. Like, this is what they have. This is what they don't have. Of course. Like, if there were more details, maybe I would have thought about it more. Maybe I would have given it more of a decision, and I would have had to sit down and ask more questions. But it's hard to ask questions when, you know, you're not getting answers either. So it's kind of right. Like no one would keep asking me questions here if I just said yes or no, or maybe we would. That's kind of how it is.
Now, the Player Advisory Council met last night here at Riviera, and I talked to one member of the PAC who said that the Super Golf League did come up. It was addressed, but he said it was very, very quick, and it was nothing that they hadn't heard before. Essentially, he said that the tour just reiterated its stand when it comes to the Super Golf League, and any players who are going to make that move over to it, they will be banned. Damon?
Rex Hoggart following this evolving story for us at Riviera on this Wednesday. Eamon, so Kramer Hickok begets Colin Morikawa, in a press conference, begats Jim McClain, a top 100 teacher, tweeting to his 40,000 followers last night that Bryson DeChambeau is gone. This is not exactly Woodward and Bernstein breaking the news of the Watergate or the New York Times in the Pentagon Papers. What is going on?
No, it's not Woodward and Bernstein. It's more like Waldorf and Statler, because we have a lot of Muppets out there who are just taking rumors and making it into fact, and rather than actually going out reporting news. And it's kind of interesting to see Kramer Hickok make the argument that players are not getting a big enough percentage of the pie in major championships, because Kramer Hickok has never actually played a major championship, not one, which is a little like lecturing a company owner on fair compensation for the employees when you don't actually work there yourself, which is not to say that there is not a case to be made that there should be more money in the majors. When you look at the prize funds for major championships in 2021, there was a collective about $47 million on offer for the players. That's up by about $7 million over the last 5-6 years. And, you know, these are all figures that are commensurate with other sports, like, say, what someone would get for winning Wimbledon or the U.S. Open Tennis Championship. And there's a lot of hidden money in there as well. If a guy wins a major championship and he's an elite player, there's almost inevitably a fairly significant bonus that's built in with all of their sponsors that they get extra money for as well. But there are currently four regular PGA Tour stops that pay as much or more than three of the four major championships. And that includes this week of the Genesis, the Arnold Palmer Invitational, the Memorial, and the WGC. There are two FedEx Cup playoff events, the FedEx St. Jude and the BMW, which pay $15 million. The players place $20 million. And then there's the bounteous money that's handed out at the Tour Championship every year for the FedEx Cup playoffs. So you could make an argument that the majors are perhaps lagging in that respect. But the bogus argument is this percentage of revenue. Mm. argument that Cramer Hickok was making. Because you can go look at the USGA's tax documents or the PGA of America's and see where the money is going. It's this attitude that they are the only constituency in this game. And you know what? If you want to grow the game, don't be a parasite. There's a lot of other places where that money goes to support growth and programs in this game from these organizations other than just the players.
There's a lot of whining. There's a lot of rumor and innuendo. But where are the players who are going to stand up and have the guts to say, I'm out of here? You know, who has the guts to leave the PGA Tour and the competitive excellence of the PGA Tour? Who has the guts to say goodbye to purses estimated to be north of $400 million this year and a FedEx Cup pie of $75 million and the Comcast Business Tour Edge of $10 million and the PIP elevated from $40 million to $50 million? And it just seems like the rumor is just is just kind of misreading the temperature of the country, of the golf fan who's sitting at home saying, hey, I spent the last 2 years trying to navigate a pandemic. I'm trying to fill my gas tank. And I'm hearing players saying, you know, where's my guaranteed money? It just seems like there's a dissonance considering where we are as a nation and as sports fans.
Yeah, I mean, Phil kept repeatedly using the word over the last few weeks, leverage. And you only have leverage until you actually sign on the dotted line, which might explain why no one has publicly come out yet to say they're doing that, because once they have signed on the dotted line, they don't have leverage, specifically not with their new employers. And look at the reality of what we have today. We hear rumors, different names, different alleged venues, different prize funds, different offers. Every single day, there's a new wave of it. The reality as we sit here today is that they don't have any tournaments. They don't have any venues. They don't have a broadcast partner. They don't have infrastructure. And they don't have players. And they don't have public support.
So is it leverage? Is it just leverage then? Is this just leverage from the
player? That's not to say that somebody won't happen or that somebody won't go on it.
Yeah.
But to me, it's more interesting to point out that they don't have. They don't have Tiger. They don't have Rory. They don't have Brooks. They don't have Colin Morikawa. They don't have Justin Thomas. They don't have John Rahm. That's the elite in this game. What they do potentially have are guys who don't have a great competitive runway left in front of them, or guys who need the money. And if you're on this yacht that's sailing along on the PGA Tour, even if you think you ought to be paid more, but you're on this beautiful yacht, why are you going to jump into Phil Mickelson's rickety life raft? It just doesn't make any sense in that respect.
They also don't have what has been called the best pension in sports, which is the PGA Tour. And to that end, I texted a PGA Tour winner this morning. I said, why do we call the PGA Tour pension the best in sports? And he gave me some details. The deferred money is the key piece. The ability to put more into a player's retirement fund than me and you can at home in your 401k. That you get points for every cut made and double points for every cut made after you make 15 cuts. 100% vested after 5 years of playing 15 or more events. It used to be 150 cuts. Now it's just, you know, 5 years of 15 cuts over a 10-year period. FedEx Cup money, 100% vested after $1 made. And also the longevity of a PGA Tour career compared to the NFL, which is 3.5 years, or baseball, which is 5 years, or hockey, which is 5 years. I mean, it just seems like in this era and with what the PGA Tour has already had and already done, it just seems like it's just misreading the room. It just seems like it's misreading. And again, no one going out there and saying, I'm gone. Everybody kind of looking around to see what everybody else is going to do. But it just feels to me like it's a negotiation. It does not feel real and tangible until somebody says, Jay Monahan, I'm out.
Yeah, I think that's very accurate. But the economics here can't really be compared to any other sport or even what the PGA itself is, because the people proposing to finance this rival league are not interested in it as a return on investment. It's a reputational sports washing exercise. The money could never possibly be returned. It's the offer of generational wealth to people who don't have to wait for any kind of deferred income. And in this sport, they seem to have found a lot of greedy, amoral people. I mean, I think a lot of sports fans don't necessarily want to get into the geopolitics of the situations in the Middle East or human rights or anything like that. They don't wish to go down that road, but they do understand one thing, which is greedy athletes.
The story will continue to follow. If Rex Hoggard has any breaking news, we will have it on this Wednesday edition of Golf Today. Back on Golf Today, a reminder, this week's tournament host Tiger Woods sits down with the media today alongside Charlie Sifford Memorial Exemption Aaron Beverly. We'll bring you that press conference live at 3 p.m. Eastern right here on golf. Now, on Sunday, Patrick Cantlay was looking to become the first player to win the WM Phoenix Open in his debut since Brooks Koepka did it back in 2015. He fell short, losing to Scottie Scheffler on the third playoff hole. Still a pretty fast start to the season, I'd say. Four top 10 finishes in as many starts, but it sounds like he's looking for a bit more than fourth and ninth and T4 and second. So for more, we turn to Kira K. Dixon on the scene at Riviera Country Club.
Well, thanks, Damon. The comfort that Patrick Cantlay feels here might just bring him that more that you're talking about and get him over the finish line. He's a Southern California native. He grew up coming to this golf tournament with his dad and his grandfather. And despite all of the recent success that he's had on the PGA Tour, here's what he had to say yesterday about the feeling of not winning week to week.
Any week that you don't win is not an ideal week.
You're not going to have a lot of ideal weeks then.
That's the nature of it. And so trying to find the right perspective where you never get satisfied with finishing second or third, while at the same time recognizing that if you're competing to win tournaments often, that will happen, is one that I try to walk the line really finally. I try to do my best to understand and realize that seconds and thirds and playoff losses are going to happen, while at the same time never being satisfied with all top 10 finishes this year. The goal is to win tournaments, and so far this year I've been shut out.
Now, over the past year, Patrick Cantlay has really emerged as a major voice in our game. He consistently gives thoughtful responses on hard topics, and one of those topics is the $50 million player impact program that all of us have been discussing recently. Here's what he had to say on that yesterday as well.
I think I'm old school in the respect that I would like the money to be doled out relative to play, and I don't think the PIP does that. And it may be the first departure that the tour has had from rewarding good play to rewarding social media or popularity presence. And so I don't like that departure.
I guess there's a lot to follow up on that. But first of all, if the social media or whatever it is drives more interest and more fans to the PGA Tour versus somebody's victory, does that make sense that then you would put money towards that?
The best way I can think of on the spot to answer that would be with a question, and it's, do you think the tour should be incentivizing it? Because that's my gripe. People are going to promote themselves on social media anyway, and we've definitely seen that. The question is whether the tour should also be incentivizing that.
Well, therein lies the $50 million question. In the meantime, Patrick calls Riviera one of his favorite courses. Over the past 4 years, he's finished at least in the top 20 here. So perhaps this will be the week he breaks through with a win instead of a near miss.
All right, Kira K. Dixon with a report on the man known as Patty Ice. And Eamon, it's interesting because last week, John Rahm was saying it's a disappointing life if you're going to be a golfer that's going to be upset, disappointed with top 10 finishes. And here we have Patrick Cantlay saying, hey, you know what? Au contraire, I didn't come here to finish second.
No, but we've heard Rory McIlroy make similar comments in the past as well on how difficult it is to find that balance between accepting the fact that on most weeks you're not going to win. Even Tiger said that in the past. Patrick Cantlay made 121 starts on the PGA Tour. He's won six times. So are we to assume that he's left miserable 115 weeks? I mean, that's a pretty high bar to set yourself up for disappointment. And I think the art of it, which he was talking about there, is this idea of finding the small victory every week, where whether it was one particular part of your game or your mental game or your course strategy or your fitness, whatever it was, something worked well that week, even if you didn't happen to leave with a trophy.
I think you do have to find the slivers of positivity, but I also think there's different levels of misery. You know, there's the Kathy Bates banging on the foot misery,
that's us, from the movie,
that's us. But there's also, you know, maybe I blew a lead, or maybe, you know what, I shot 66 and got into the top 10. So I think there's different levels. I think top 10s aren't created equal. And I just love the fact that Patrick Cantlay is saying, listen, I demand and expect excellence. and I've come here to win. And I think for most sports fans, even knowing that golf is different than a 17-game NFL season, that every week is precious and that winning on the PGA Tour is hard, and he recognizes that, but that his standard of walking away from a golf course on Sunday is as high as can be.
Yeah, I think it's all of these guys are going to set themselves the goal of excellence and victory on any given week. The trick is how low is the disappointment when you don't hit the excellence, because that can be pretty corrosive to a guy who's playing for a living if you start to deem every week to be a failure if it is not the absolute success. And I think that makes the mental game side of professional sports really, really difficult for guys who can't find that balance. Cantlay right now does appear to have the balance. He's setting an extraordinarily high goal for himself every week and won't be surprised when he gets there. The trick is just to not let the bottom part of that, you know, bell curve really kind of get to you.
Well, part and parcel with his statement is his statement about the PIP points, the Player Impact Program, which is about Google impressions and Meltwater mentions. And he's saying, you know, I don't want that incentivized. He was asked about it last year during the FedEx Cup playoffs about the heckling that Bryson DeChambeau received in their duel at the BMW. And he was like, this is kind of the era we live in now. You know, players are expected to dye their hair blonde or to shout like The Rock to compete for these PIP points instead of being rewarded for simply what you do inside the ropes. I think it is a very old school take in this new era of golf.
It is, but also it bears saying that Patrick Cantlay is not a guy who's likely to win the PIP anyway. He's just not that kind of effusive personality. And I would also argue that we haven't seen an awful lot of evidence of guys on social media doing stuff that they weren't likely to be doing anyway. And, you know, the PGA Tour is a business, like every other business out there, and every business incentivizes members or employees who add value. That value isn't always easy to quantify. And there are a bunch of guys out there who are needle movers in terms of fan engagement and fan interest. Patrick Cantlay's probably on the cusp of being one of those people, but I don't think he's there right now. I don't have a problem with the PIP in theory. Obviously, it would be great if guys are, you know, rewarded for play more so than presence. But this is the same argument that a lot of these guys are making, that they want guaranteed money. Well, this is guaranteed money, and the guy likely to win the PIP this year, it's still not enough for him. So it's, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing at all.
Yeah, the PIP obviously put in place to protect the tour and to keep the players happy in the face of these rival leagues that we've been talking about.
Can't ever make them happy, Damon.
Absolutely. Little by little, PGA Tour trying to do just that. We're back on Golf Today. You may know Jake Olson's story. He lost sight in his left eye before the age of one. Over the course of the next 12 years, he battled cancer in his right eye 8 times before losing his vision. But that did not stop him. In 2017, Jake became the first blind football player when he snapped in USC's game against Western Michigan. And guess what? Jake also happens to love the game of golf. Big-time golfer, golf fan, was out on site at Riviera yesterday, hanging out with the likes of Chess and Hadley, absorbing all the vibes at the Genesis Invitational in Pacific Palisades. And Jake joins us now. It's great to spend some time with you. You faced some incredible challenges in your young life and met them head on. What has given you the inspiration to just keep on trucking?
Thanks for having me, guys. Obviously, you know, my faith has played a big part in that, but really, after I lost my right eye and became completely blind, I just made a promise to myself that blindness wasn't going to rob me of my future or my childhood or doing the things that I loved. And that included playing golf. And so almost immediately after losing my eyesight, you know, I started picking up the club. You know, I played before losing my eyesight, but obviously after losing your eyesight, you take a few steps backwards. But so I started working with my dad a solution of how he could line me up out there and we could continue to play. And really just made that determination that, again, blindness wasn't going to rob me of this game I loved.
Jake, the challenges would seem obvious in such a visual sport of playing blind. What is for you the toughest or the easiest part of this game? Do you know right after impact feel whether or not you've hit a good shot or a bad shot?
For sure. I mean, obviously the quality of shot you can feel right away. Sometimes you can get a little tricky if you know, directionally where it's going, but I'd say the toughest part really was learning, you know, a new swing or when you're trying to fix something. You know, a lot of times I say your eyes obviously play kind of a safety net of at least making solid contact with the ball. So for a while there in the first couple of years, it was, you know, making big adjustments to the swing. And unfortunately, you know, if there was a big enough adjustment, I could start missing the ball again, which obviously is, you know, 10 steps backwards. But, you know, you kind of have to stick with it and continue to play and work on that improvement in the swing, knowing down the road you're going to take 11 steps forward.
Now, yesterday on the range at Riviera, you gave Chesson Hadley a little bit of your experience. You put a blindfold on him and handed him a driver. How did that work out for Chesson?
Well, at first he was taking some divots. I'm not sure if Riviera's range people like that too much, but it was great. I mean, it really was fun to see him improve throughout the five swings he took. He kind of settled it down a little bit. He said he didn't try to swing as hard and just kind of focus on his body and the feel of it. And that's really the important thing of really just trying to notice and have that brain realize where the body is in space throughout the entirety of the swing.
Jake, I hate three putts, I hate hitting into the water, but I still come back and play this game year after year. What made you fall in love with golf in the first place?
Man, so many things. Obviously, just the nature of it, the beauty of just being in a golf course, and you know all the variant different types of golf courses you could play. And but really, I mean, I grew up in Southern California, so they say there's nothing like, you know, riding a surf wave on a surfboard, which is true. But there really is nothing like hitting a pure shot in golf either, and it really is addicting to kind of you go out there and just be able to strike the ball and to score on holes. I mean, it really is a feeling like no other.
All right, you're a Trojan, I'm a Bruin, but we're doing this, and so far, so good. How about a bucket list course, a place you can't wait to play, and maybe we can roll together and get some licks in on the golf course?
I've been very fortunate to play a lot of beautiful golf courses. Probably the one that you guys would probably be most interested in is right before I lost my eyesight, I was able to go up to Pebble Beach, play a lot of the courses up there, but most importantly, Cypress Point. They were able to get me on Cypress Point, so I was able to see that one last time, which was just amazing. But if I had to obviously pick a course, it'd probably be Augusta down in Georgia. That would be just an incredible experience to be able to, you know, the history and just feeling the pines all around me.
Jake, you've said in the past that it's just your father and you out there. What is the routine like between you guys? Is it a typical, you know, player caddy conversation? What's your pre-shot routine? What's your post-shot routine with your dad?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, you know, there is a painstaking process of making sure I'm lined up correctly, right, to deliver a good shot, and that has to be done perfectly. But over the 10 years now, or 12 years, I mean, we don't really even focus on that part. It's really just a part of our nature now. So there's full trust in him. He's got full trust in me. So that part really isn't our focus. Our focus really is just a normal golfer caddy relationship of distance. You know, when we get in the short game or close to the green, there is a little more of a description that has to be given. Hey, we're 30 yards from the pin, we got 20 yards of rough to the green, we're going to probably have to land this, you know, mid-20s. So stuff like that is a little more explained to me. But from a standpoint of just a normal shot in the fairway or off a tee, just describe, hey, you know, this is a dog leg left, or, you know, just play normal your shot, or hey, we're 172 yards out, the wind's behind us, it's a little uphill. You know, so that type of conversation is just pretty normal amongst us, like any other golfer.
So I read that you're this practical joker. You like kind of kidding your friends. Give us an example of something you do that makes you chuckle.
Well, I didn't even know that we did this, but when my dad, on the tee box especially, my dad will put the tee in the ground, but beforehand, he'll kind of set my driver down for me to take some practice swings. And we didn't even mean to do this, but when he tees that, bends down to put the tee in, his head is probably 6 inches to a foot away from where I'm taking my practice swing. And a lot of people, when they first play with us, like gasp every time that happens, because here's this blind kid just swinging driver, full swing, practice swing, and this guy's putting his head probably 6 inches away. So we like to mess with people that way now, given that we learned that, hey, this is something people are nervous about. So we get pretty close sometimes.
Gotta love it, Jake. You're clearly a lot of fun. Now, I also read that you met Kobe Bryant in a tough time in your life. You were losing your eyesight, especially in retrospect, since we've lost Kobe Bryant. What did that time in your life mean, especially as a Laker fan?
Yeah, no, it was awesome. It was that fall that I was losing my eyesight. Obviously, you guys have seen the stories that I was invited in the USC team and how much they were there for me. But also getting that experience, like I said, with the Lakers, I got to sit courtside. I saw on the baseline, so I got to see the Laker girls one last time, which was an awesome experience. But yes, meeting the Lakers afterwards, and Kobe was the last one in that locker room and spent the most time with us. And just kind of being around him. You know, there were so many people between Pete Carroll, Kobe, others that just showed me this competitive nature of just, hey, I don't care what happens. Like, you got to go out there and fight. compete always, find a way. And that's really what I kind of did in life and took that mindset after losing my eyesight, that I'm going to find a way to continue to be a straight-A student, to be a normal kid, to have fun, and to play these sports I love.
Jake, you're an inspiration. It's awesome to catch up with you. Hope to catch up with you maybe at Cypress or Augusta National at some point down the road.
All right, guys. It's a promise, all right?
Deal done. A Bruin and Trojan walking the fairways of Cypress Point. Put it down, ladies and gentlemen. All right, folks. Well, the world number five, Rory McIlroy, has cracked the top five twice at Riviera, but a win has eluded him. A deeper dive into Rory's season when Golf Today returns. Coming up on Golf Today, from Hollywood, Northern Ireland to Hollywood, California, Rory, a global star from humble beginnings. What are the expectations for a 20-time PGA Tour winner this week at Riv? And from feeling the dreams of others to chasing the dream himself, Rob Lavritz, longtime PGA professional, ready for his run on PGA Tour champions and the 50 and over set. And speaking of champions, Tiger Woods, 15-time major champ, getting ready to meet the media in L.A., talking hosting and maybe playing some golf in the near future. Ooh la la, it's Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Another hour of Golf Today. Dustin Johnson, 2017 champ, 89 under par since 2008 at Riv. That's the best by 36 shots. Just a guy who sashays through life, uber cool. Time was he could dunk a basketball barefoot. Not sure if fatherhood has changed that. One of the guys always picked first on the playground in the hard scrabble streets of South Carolina. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch. You've actually been to Hollywood, Northern Ireland, and Hollywood, California.
And I never made an impact in either one of them, Damon. But yeah, I mean, in Hollywood, we're focused on this week. There's certainly a lot of drama, a few villains, a little bit of farce. I mean, it seems as though a lot of storylines are kind of hurtling towards the final credits here, and some of the drama is even actually happening between the ropes on the golf course.
Yeah, who's going to win the Academy Award for Best Actor? I guess we'll find out. How about Hollywood, Northern Ireland? You actually been there. You know of where Rory McIlroy is from.
Yeah, quaint little town just east of Belfast. And Rory McIlroy actually just spent a week there himself on his way back from his last start in Dubai. He spent a week back in the simulator at Hollywood Golf Club working with his longtime coach, Michael Bannon, with whom he reunited a couple of months ago.
Yeah, a little different in Hollywood, Northern Ireland. 11,000 people on the 2011 UK census compared to Hollywood, California, where he is now looking for his first win at Riviera. He's had some terrific finishes. You see that T5 in 2020? He was a 54-hole hole leader, had a triple bogey at 5, sent him tumbling down the leaderboard. And then last year, you see that MC Hammer. Nobody likes that, but we're going to flash back anyway. Eamon, once again, this golf course just is a golf course for savants, for geniuses, and it would seem like it would be a perfect fit for this four-time major champion.
Yeah, and this was a period where Rory McIlroy was really kind of lost with his swing. He'd admitted over the previous fall that he'd gotten into chasing speed in the Bryson DeChambeau mode, and then it was within a few weeks of missing the cut here in Riviera that he started working with Pete Cowan, and that experiment ended just before the Ryder Cup as well. So this was in a period where he was not, I don't think, in a good place at all with the golf game.
Yeah. You see a couple wins since then, of course, in Charlotte and Las Vegas as well. Three missed cuts, but Rory back in the frame this week at Riviera. I mean, what are your expectations? You've told us he spent some time with Michael Bannon. Obviously, they couldn't see each other as much during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. Are you expecting big things from him this week and maybe big picture as well?
I certainly expect more from him this week than we saw last year. And I assume he expects that from himself as well. His last two appearances, or two of his last three, have been quite interesting. They've all been in the Middle East. And he had a chance to win in Dubai in the fall, and he lost out to Colin Morikawa. He didn't play particularly well in Abu Dhabi, and then had a real chance to win a couple of weeks ago and lost it to Hovland with a shot into the water on the last hole in Dubai. And there's a definite sense, I think, that the irritation and the frustration is there, which I actually think is a good thing. I think a little more, what they say in Europe is chippiness, a kind of a little more aggression, getting worked up, getting irritated a little more actually is probably good for a guy like Rory McIlroy, because you want that little edge. And I don't necessarily think he lacks drive or anything, but I sometimes get the sense that maybe it doesn't hurt him as much as it does others. And I'm starting to get the sense now that outcomes like we just saw a couple of times in Dubai, I do think that actually is starting to hurt him a lot more than it used to. I think he's getting frustrated that he puts himself in the position to win all the time, and so many of them just tend to slip away, which they do for all elite players, because it is difficult to win out there. But I think it's really starting to bother him that he needs to close the door a little more often than he does.
We're watching Rory, his practice round on the par 4 third hole at Riviera. And you mentioned that the loss is bothering him. When you look at where he sits in the game and the expectations and the tantalizing nature of his chase for the career Grand Slam and where he has to get it done, it almost seems as if it's like you complete the career Grand Slam or nothing, or you're a failure, or you're not living up to everything we thought. You win a fifth major, or you're what they call in the NFL a jag, just another guy.
Yeah, and he's had that pressure now for a long time, since 2014. And, of course, his best chance to ever win the Masters came before he won any majors, back in 2011 when he lost that four-stroke lead in the final round. I think he's very conscious of it. He's tried different ways to depressurize the Masters. He even had a mental game guru wandering around with him a few years ago, trying to take the pressure off of and the emphasis off that event. And Rory decided after the fact that it didn't work for him to do it that way. He kind of needed to feel that little bit of extra pressure out there as well. But I would also, you know, you talked about his position in the game, and clearly he feels the need to be a voice in the game. He's just finished his term as chairman of the Players Advisory Council, and he now moves on, like all previous chairmen, to the Tours Policy Board. And you would find some people in the game who wonder if Rory should be doing that in his peak years, that it could become a distraction to be involved in kind of the politics or administration of the game, particularly in the era that we're living in now, where there are existential threats to the PGA Tour. It can be more consuming than it might have been at other times for people to serve in that role. But he's now clear that from the decks as of last night, he's no longer the chairman of the Players Advisory Council. That's co-chairman now. They have Webb Simpson and Peter Malnati as of today in that role. So perhaps that clears some of the responsibility off his plate and sets him up for a year where he can focus on what really matters here.
The only PGA Tour player I've ever spoken to about Deepak Chopra and Oprah Winfrey and meditation, something that he listens to from time to time. And you mentioned kind of the structure around him now and having a voice in the game. How about fatherhood and being a husband? And we've seen, you know, from time immemorial, players that add whatever, a wife, a child, something different, playing for something outside of yourself. He's no longer the 20-something wunderkind from Hollywood, Northern Ireland. Now he is a big-name, big-time professional athlete. But now that he has a family in place, there's a one line of thinking that says, oh, that's going to hurt him. And there's one line of thinking that's saying, you know what, that's going to help broaden his horizon, playing for something outside of himself. What do you think?
I think it broadens the horizon in the sense that it creates balance, that you're no longer focused on what's happening between the ropes. You no longer measure yourself simply by what's written on a scorecard at the end of the day or at the end of the week. He doesn't strike me as a type who's going to play for his family. That's a goal. I think he's the type who separates his family from what he does on his workday, from his 9-to-5 job. I don't think he uses his family as a goal of trying to impress his wife or daughter in that sense. But, you know, he's got extensive business interests. He got married a few years ago. He has a child. Life does get more complicated and, you know, speed bumps come up. It's very easy to be like Bryson at this point in life, who doesn't have any of that and doesn't have the distractions of that. So you can focus 24/7. With this mania for golf. But eventually that erodes. Your obligations grow and your focus on the game kind of has to diminish a little bit, or at least become narrower. And that's probably where Rory McIlroy's in. He will repeatedly tell people that he's in the happiest place he's ever been in his life. He's probably not in the happiest place he's ever been with his game or his golf swing right now. But, you know, he's not in a bad place. He's won twice since last May.
Yeah, for some players, we would be throwing a parade for them, but not for Rory McIlroy. Do you feel like he hears the criticism, because this was a player who in his younger days on the PGA Tour, and I've talked to him about it, he would consume Golf Central and consume Golf Channel and kind of watch the shows and follow tweets on where he sat in the official world golf ranking. He was very aware. Some players don't want that distraction. They want to play and live in a bubble. How aware is he of the us replaying his torn shirt or us, you know, announcing his lack of a major since 2014? Is he up on that? Is he keeping up with the Joneses, as it were?
Every single player on the PGA Tour will tell you that they do not read, that they do not watch Golf Channel. Every one of them is lying. All of them do it. And they only remember the negative stuff. That's for sure. Every writer in this business knows they only remember the negative stuff. But all of them are paying attention. Some a little more than others. Rory's probably in the middle of that pack somewhere. Yeah. But there are guys out there who pay a lot of attention.
Four majors, 20 PGA Tour wins, two FedEx Cup titles, and still in some ways it's just not enough.
It's never enough. When you have that much talent, you're always going to be held to a higher bar.
Yeah, and that high bar continues this week at Riviera Country Club. How about the defending champ? You know, Rory not even there on the weekend 1 year ago. How about the hometown hero?
Yeah, it's bizarre. I have, you know, a framed picture and glove and ball signed in the locker room is weird. All of it's very surreal. I would have loved coming back here no matter what the year, what the day, even if it was just a Wednesday in the middle of the summer. I feel lucky to come to Riviera, but coming back as defending champion, knowing what happened last year is feels very fake, but I'm very appreciative, and it's cool to be back.
Berkeley alum, Laker fan, Dodger fan, watched Tiger from outside the ropes trying to hunt down an autograph and able to receive the trophy from Tiger 1 year ago. You see the tee time. Look at this grouping alongside a couple of major champs, a couple of Masters champs, Dustin Johnson, Adam Scott, both former world number ones. And folks, coming up next, Oklahoma State Cowboy and rising college standout Eugenio Chikara joins us. More on his season and goals after the break.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And by Cobra LTDX Drivers, engineer for the longest total distance.
Welcome back to Golf Today. We take a look at the PGA Tour University Velocity Global Rankings. These young players, seniors, looking for pathways to the professional game, trying to stay in that top 15. Cole Hammer, we spoke to him in the past. RJ Mankey from UW. How about the top five? These are players that are, you know, with big dreams. Number four, Eugenio Chikara from Oklahoma State. Been so fun to follow these young careers and the growth of the college game. You know, you got the East Lake Cup, NCAAs on Golf Channel. A little more on Eugenio, by the way, from Madrid, Spain. Won over 100 junior tournaments. That's a lot of trophies. I wonder where he keeps them all. 2019 ACC Freshman of the Year at Wake Forest, transferred to OSU, that decorated program. Won the 2022 Amir Ari Invitational for the final round of 62 earlier this month. Yeah, he fired that 10 under par. New course record, by the way. Not only win his first college individual title and come from behind fashion, but his birdie eagle finish was also enough to lead the Cowboys to an incredible final round rally for the team victory. Sister Carolina is a freshman at Wake. She closes in on 62 at the UCF Challenge in Orlando, wins her first college title at 19 under. It's a family of ballers. I mean, what can you say? And Eugenio joins us on this Wednesday. First of all, more than 100 junior trophies. Like, where are they? Boxes, shelves, or perhaps your dorm room?
Yeah, they're back home where my grandfather's house. So, I mean, it's been a nice journey. I mean, I'm pretty excited for this season for the team here in Oklahoma State. And just keep working hard and just hopefully everything goes in the right direction.
Now, Eugenio, you've described in the past Sergio Garcia as being a particularly close mentor of yours. What have you learned from him and what kind of advice has he given you?
Well, I mean, everything that helps me, it always grew me as a player. I mean, he has a lot of experience, and he's obviously one of the best players in the world. I'm lucky enough that I talk to him a bunch, and he helps me with my swing, with my mental, with how everything's going, planning my season and everything. So it's been great for me, and I think I've learned every single time of him.
You're following in a wonderful legacy of Spanish golf, Seve and Ollie, Sergio, Miguel, John, Rahm, but Spain is a sports-crazy nation. Soccer is big. Rafa Nadal, did you consider any other career path besides golf?
Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, I played soccer a lot. So I was thinking about trying to be a professional soccer. It's kind of like the sport back home in Spain. But when I was 15, I was deciding between soccer and golf, and I chose golf, and I think I made the right call there.
You recently moved to the broomstick putter, which we tend not to see in college golfers very often, but you said it made a huge difference for you. Explain to us what it was like beforehand and how it feels now. What was that change?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a great change for me. I mean, I was struggling with my putting for the last couple of years, and it was the thing that's was not letting me win events or being up there in contention every single week. And just having a preseason back home, actually, I had a really bad Mayakoba on the PGA Tour. I hit the ball really good, and I had a really bad days on the greens. So I just saw Aaron Wise there one day on the range, and I just talked to him and asked him why was he putting like that, and all he said makes sense to try it. So I used to try it everything, and nothing was kind of helping me. So trying that new style that was different for my mind, and I never tried it. Kind of like it was hard at the start, but I mean, it just got pretty quick into me, and I mean, it's been nice. I mean, I hope it stays like this. I've been putting good. I've been having fun in the greens again. I'm not afraid of any 5-footer or 10-footer anymore. So I'm just enjoying the ride, and I really like how it's working for me.
I wish I wasn't afraid of those 5-footers. You afraid of them sometimes?
I'd like to have a 5-footer,
right, actually. Exactly. Not for 6, maybe for 4 one of these days. What was it like for you, Eugenio, when you arrived to Stillwater for the first time, walked into those offices, saw all those trophies, pictures of Charles Howell III and Ricky Fowler, et cetera, et cetera?
I mean, it's hard. It's hard to beat places like Oklahoma State or Stillwater. I mean, I've been great since the first day. I love it here. I love my teammates. I love the coaches. I love the past players, and they're always trying to help. It's pretty hard to explain what you live here. I mean, everything, they help you to get better as a golf and get better as a player. And I feel like I perform a lot as a player and also as a person. I mean, I just feel like my game has totally changed my look and how I play golf, and just like very nice to have a lot of teammates that wants you to get better. I mean, we got 13 guys on our team, and all of them could play in a lineup. I mean, we had 7 different lineups in the 7 tournaments we played. It's always hard to be in there, and it just makes you better every day. So I'm really grateful for the opportunity they gave me to be here, and I will be always a poke.
In terms of the next steps of your career and your ultimate pathway into the pro game, where does the PGA Tour University and those rankings set up for you in terms of that pathway?
Yeah, I think PGA Tour University is doing a huge deal for us. I mean, I feel every college player in the country is very grateful for what they did, for giving us an opportunity when we're done in college to go quicker onto the pro tours. So I feel it's a great initiation for us, and it's a goal for every senior that's in the country or every junior that's playing for getting to the ranking in the next year. So it's something that you have in your mind. But I mean, as I say, I believe more like working hard every day, and good golf will take care of itself. So, I mean, it's something great, but I'm trying to not focus a lot on rankings right now. I'm just trying to play good every week and getting better to be on the PGA Tour in the next years.
Eugenio, you're a fantastic player. Your sister's a fantastic player. I'm raising 3 boys, triplets born 1 minute apart, sibling rivalry already underway at the age of 10. How did you guys make it work, support each other and kind of lift each other up? Or was it kind of mayhem as well?
Well, we just like to be each other together. I mean, we just something like we start practicing a lot together. We have the same mental coach, same strength coach, and same golf coach. So back home, we just finish school, and I drive, I pick her up, and we just both go to the course and do everything together. So we push each other every day. I mean, we have a great relationship. She's a great player. She hits it long, and she also likes golf a lot. So it's been great for me to have someone that I when I'm back home every day that I you need to play really good to beat her. So we're getting better each other every day. We're back home, and like I said, we both had a fantastic preseason back in December back home with all our coaches, and I feel like this is going to be a good year for us, but we just need to keep working hard and keep getting better.
Well, Eugenio, it's fun to visit with you. Best of luck the rest of the season. Give our best to Coach Bratton, and we hope to speak to you down the road.
I will. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Eugenio Chikar of Oklahoma State University. So much talent, Eamon, as you know, across the world of college golf. Some of the candidates for the 2022 Haskins Award presented by Stifel, the award given annually to the Player of the Year in men's college golf. And you see this list of names, some folks you might have seen on an afternoon and during the week on Golf Channel. David Puge, for example, of ASU, RJ Mankey from UW. Lot of talented players on this watch list so far. How about the women's game? The Annika Award presented by Stifel and their watch list as well. Hannah Darling, you see. Julia Johnson, another OSU player, Kaylee McGinty, Erica Shepherd of Duke. How about Rose Zhang? I mean, all she does is win, 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 no matter what. So much talent in the women's game as well. All right, folks, one of the feel-good stories of 2021 was Rob LeBritz in tears. After 3 decades as a club pro, secured his PGA Tour Champions card for 2022. He joins us next to have his debut.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Back on Golf Today, one of the longest running events on the senior circuit returns to its February dates after being played in April in 2021. This week marks the 35th Chubb Classic at Tiburon Golf Club in Naples, Florida. Some notable PGA Tour champions debuts: major champ Y.E. Yang, Brian Gay, 5-time winner on the PGA Tour. And you see Rob LeBritz. Yeah, why is that name familiar? Earned medalist honors at PGA Tour Champions Q School in December. He could not hold back the emotions.
What don't you call you get over here? Holy shit, dude. Let's go.
So proud of you. All that hard work, dude. Oh my god.
Sacrifice, dude.
I'm gonna call my wife.
We did.
I think I pulled a muscle in my rib. No, I'm just kidding. I'm good. I'm just. We did it. All the sacrifice, we did it. I appreciate you so much. You have no idea.
One of the great scenes of 2021, and Rob joins us on this Wednesday. Rob, how much were you expecting the emotions to flow like that, or was that a surprise?
Are you guys showing this to me again so you get my emotions flowing? It was a. Yeah, I mean, I'm an emotional guy. I've said it before. It's just a lifelong dream of mine, you know, to come out here. And you know, we're a couple days on the eve of teeing it up in my first Champions Tour event. And, you know, it was just it was a lifetime of just loving the game of golf and finally making it to the level that I wanted to get to. And now we're here. So totally excited.
And as you know, Rob, you're dealing with two guys here who've broken into tears, even the golf course as well, but for entirely different reasons. You set your goal on the Champions Tour a long time ago. When did you start working towards this point that you're about to start on this week?
Yeah, I started this when I left the Canadian Tour in 2005, when I took the director of golf position at Glen Arbor. My son was going to be 18 by the time I was 50. And I figured, I would give the club pro business my best shot to build this beautiful golf club we have up in Bedford Hills called Glen Arbor. But every day, you know, worked on my game, worked on my body, just kept the dream alive, kept envisioning it, kept working towards it, played in all the section events, the Met section events. And you know, when Q School came around, I just happened to play great the 2 weeks to get myself there. And here we are you know, on the couple days before our chub and just getting ready to go rip it with these guys. I am just beyond the moon.
Rob, you've been fueling the dreams of others for years, you know, the man and woman trying to break 100 or 90 or 80. Were your dreams in the forefront of your mind? Were they in the back of your mind? Were they ever extinguished completely at all?
No, never extinguished. Always, you know, being a director of golf at a club, at a high-end private club, you know, you put everything else first. You put your family first. You put your job first. You put your clients first. You put your members first. You put everything that's in front of you first. And golf was always there, but I have this passion for the game. I love to play it. I love to try to improve. And you know, being in the Met section, I was able to really just keep my game at a really high level. And the Metropolitan Golf Association, they run such great events, and I've had some success at the section level and the National Club Pro level, and you know, playing in those majors has always kind of kept my confidence high. Every time I've played with a top player on the planet, you know, whether it be a Tommy Fleetwood or a Dustin Johnson or a you know, Webb Simpson or whoever it is, I always just kind of compared myself, you know, game-wise to him. And there wasn't that much of a difference, you know, in these practice rounds. Now, obviously, it's a little different when you're playing in a four-round event with the major championship stuff. But I always kept the dream alive. And my goodness, we're here and we're ready to just go out and make more birdies and bogeys.
Rob, you played in the PGA Championship 8 times. And obviously, you just mentioned taking that experience and being able to compare yourself to the best players in the world up close and personal. Do you expect to win out here?
I do. I expect to win every tournament that I step my foot in. I can hit the golf ball. I can hit it over 300 yards. I can wedge it close and I can make putts. I get nervous, but I can handle my nerves under pressure. The difference out here is going to be, you know, kind of finding the balance between playing, practicing, and you know, sort of pro-ams. There's a lot of pro-ams out here and there's a lot of rounds. So I'll be playing, you know, 4 or 5, almost 6 times a week. So to find the balance to keep my game sharp and to keep my body healthy and my sort of interest in practice, you know, at the top level is going to be the sort of the stepping stones that I'm just trying to figure out and hopefully make the best out of.
So now you've gone from being the old dog in the hunt in the other tournament you played to now you're the young pup on the block. Does that change anything for you? Who are the guys that you're hanging around with this week that you watched when you were the director of golf back at Glen Arbor, and now you're out there competing against them?
Yeah, I haven't really hung out with anybody except my pro-am partners. You know, all the guys out here on the Champions Tour have been coming up to me and introducing themselves and saying what a great story it is and just welcome to the club out here. It's been a really nice stepping into this Champions Tour. Last night they told me there was some sort of meeting on the 12th green at 9 o'clock, which I showed up and the sprinklers came out. I don't know what happened there. I'm just kidding. But it's been really cool. It's been really fun. And I'm looking forward to just getting out here and competing on these great golf courses.
I love that you're coming out to win. You sound like Patrick Cantlay, who doesn't like second or ninth or anything other than victory. To that point, will you lean on anybody else out there for advice, or do you feel like you kind of know enough about how the sausage is made and you'll stick to your own process?
Yeah, I have a good process, but you know, I'm a golf pro. You can learn things every day. I'm going to talk to as many guys as I can talk to. I'm talking to the veterans out here to see how they travel, where they stay, you know, how to practice, when to practice, you know, when to work out. There's a lot of pro-ams you have to do out here, which, you know, as you play in pro-ams, you're playing 5-hour rounds and, you know, you're not working on your game so much as you're hitting a shot. But, you know, anybody that wants to give me advice, I'm all ears. And, you know, like a good player, I'm going to take some of the advice and some of the other advice, you know, we'll see whatever fits. But my sausage so far, my sausage compartment, it's been working so far in my shell. So we're going to keep doing what we're doing. And any bits of advice that I get that people give to me, I'm going to definitely take and take to heart.
Well, Rob, Eamon and I were just about to hit you up for some lessons, but we understand you're going to be a little bit busy in the next few weeks. So enjoy your debut. We'll catch up with you down the road.
Damon, Eamon, thanks so much. I've heard that before, by the way, and I'm still holding you to it. So I look forward to helping you guys with your game.
All right, Rob LaBritz mixing it up with the likes of Bernhard Langer, and then maybe he'll help us sometime down the road.